readers, writers, and plot enthusiasts. I'm Ella.
And I'm Ellie. Welcome to our podcast, The Plot Thickens, where we talk about all things books, writing, and storylines.
Grab your favorite tea and settle in to listen every other week wherever you get your podcasts.
For the stories and the friends that shape us. Hey, listeners, I'm Ellie.
And I'm Ella.
And welcome back to The Plot Thickens. I'm here and I'm drinking a cup of vitamin C tea with honey in it.
I am sitting here with some passion tea with honey in it. A gift from my sister.
We're both drinking honey from our native states, which is really fun.
We are slightly honey purists, but only a little bit.
Just a little bit. I haven't always had the best luck with honey in the past. So when I came to college, I wasn't that into honey yet. So when I ran out of honey, I tried ordering honey off of Amazon. And it shipped to me, and I started eating it, and I was like, this honey, this feels off. And it started with the smell. I was like, this honey doesn't smell right. I don't know what honey's supposed to smell right, but it didn't smell right to me. And Ella didn't believe me.
She came to me and she was like, my honey tastes weird. And I was like, well, what honey do you normally buy? And she was like, the stuff, the off-brand stuff in the grocery store. And I was like, you've never had good honey before, Ellie. She also did not tell me. She mentioned she bought honey. She mentioned it was online. What she did not mention is that she bought this honey for, what was it, like $2?
It was $3.
It was $3. You do not buy things online for $3 and expect them to be
safe. I thought it was fine. But then, so I have Ella over one day, and we were watching a movie or something, that I was like, Ella, while you're here, you need to try this tea to prove that I'm, like, not going insane. So you try. I think you even said it was fine.
You're like, it tasted a little off, but you know, we'd never had Virginia honey before.
So we both try it. We're both sick that night, okay? Like, we both felt so sick after that. So then the next day, we get together and we're like, yeah, something's wrong with this honey. But Ella still insists that it's not spoiled.
Honey cannot spoil, actually. It's impossible. However, what it can do is ferment. And be not honey.
Which happens when the honey packaging gets, like, disturbed in some way.
Or when they add water to honey to try to water it down and sell it, you know, maybe for really cheap online. So we become internet sleuths. Just a little bit.
Just a tiny bit.
And we start digging. And we find out this honey is not from where we thought it was.
No.
In fact, it was either from, we did a lot of digging into this, like, company and honey, and we went on down this whole rabbit trail, and found out this honey was from either India or Brazil or something? We weren't sure which one.
Yeah, and probably a lot older than they said it was, because it had been shipped from so far away. It was definitely not from within the U.S. like it said it was on the label.
They were slightly deceitful in that, and we did not eat that honey again. And I instead introduced Ellie to the wonderful world of real honey.
Yes. Oh
real
my goodness, yes.
Good honey.
And now I only ship honey in from my native state for a lot of money. So my wallet is not as happy, but my stomach is much happier.
I mean, I was voting that she ship honey in from my native state, but you know.
Personally, I think my honey is better. I gave you some of my honey. What do you think?
I think that they are both delightful and good in different ways. Your honey is, like, lighter. It's sweeter. It tastes like flowers. Mine is darker. It has, like, a orange blossomy taste to it, you know?
So they're both good for different things. Good for different things, yes. We both love honey from different places. We both love other worlds and stories, which brings us to our topic of the day, from a galaxy far, far away. The Mandalorian. But first, we have to talk about the real question here. Ella, are we Star Wars fans?
No? But question mark. We're not Star Wars fans. We just watch them a lot, frequently, together, and talk about it. I'm not really sure where this, like, Star Wars thing came from, but suddenly, it's just been a part of our friendship since we've been friends.
I know.
And it really ramped up when the third season of Mandalorian was coming out our freshman year. We got very invested.
We did. We really did.
And we became not Star Wars fans. Mm-hmm. We are not Star Wars fans. Mm-hmm. We are Star Wars
analyzers?
Yes, thank you.
Yes, I feel like that's honestly true. Which is, what's even funnier is that we established right off the bat that neither of us are Star Wars fans. Like, I think the first thing we talked about in this conversation was us complaining about Star Wars and how our siblings all love it, but we don't love it.
That's true. We did talk about that, because I think right off the bat we were talking and we didn't like it, but then for some reason we still ended up watching it together and yes. being like, oh, we have to watch it.
Yeah.
But obviously not because we like it.
Just because we want to watch together, you know?
Yeah, it's fellowship.
It was fellowship. And here we are, many hours of talking about this show later, and, like, all of Star Wars and these obscure, like, world-building plot and details. The conversation we've had about this with each other and in front of other people who have looked at us and been like, so you really care about this? And we're like, actually, no.
Yeah, we don't care. Do we know maybe more details than we should know about the Star Wars universe? All the obscure references, mm-hmm. the tiny subplots, mm-hmm. the weird tie-ins.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Do we get weirdly excited by these subtle references that only an extreme Star Wars nerd would catch?
Possibly. But hey, we're not fans. We just feel like we need to discuss it and rewrite it in our minds.
Yes, yes. Because some of it definitely needs rewriting, which we'll get into.
Indeed. Which is the main thing that we love about Mandalorian, and that we feel the need to discuss, a vital part of the mm-hmm. Mandalorian saga, is the Mandalorian dialogue.
Yes.
How do we feel about the Mandalorian dialogue?
Oh my goodness. The dialogue is absolutely incredible in this series. And I feel like I didn't realize this till season 3, just by contrast, because season 3 does not have as good dialogue. And what I mean by that is it has too much. So I feel like part of the joy of The Mandalorian is that it almost gives you, like, silent film vibes. Mm-hmm. So you can go, like, long periods of time without anybody saying anything, but you're still, like, so interested, especially because The Mandalorian chooses his words so carefully. It's like you're on the edge of your seat trying to figure out what he's going to say next, what he's going to do next, because you don't know. So Mandalorian season 3, when they were just doing so much talking about everything that was going on, it was honestly, it was a letdown on so many levels, but one of the big ones, because they were breaking character for something that this guy, like, has done for the entire series.
Yeah, definitely the level of dialogue can only be matched by the level of dialogue we had about the dialogue.
Yes. But honestly. Yeah,
I definitely enjoyed the almost Western feel, like, old Western-y feel mm-hmm. that you got from the first two seasons mm-hmm. that were very much so this character that you didn't know much about and yeah. you could enjoy trying to piece together. It was definitely mm-hmm. for the people who want to figure something out and yeah. don't want to be told it.
Yeah, yeah. Which honestly is a big way of respecting your audience. Just, like, giving your audience the space to, like, have their own mm-hmm. thoughts and to come to their own opinions and to just be able to think through something versus telling them what they should think.
Mm-hmm. And it's also that balance between you, obviously as the author, you want to come to something with your own ideas and mm-hmm. your own things, and you want to convey those ideas, certainly, and bring other people along on this journey. Mm-hmm. But you also have to realize that readers are going to come in with their own perspectives as well and yeah. read in their own things, and sometimes mm-hmm. that can add to a story as well.
Yeah, which is really cool about The Mandalorian, because the first two seasons event also just gave you, like, this big amount of space to, like, be able to figure things out. Mm-hmm. And though it came to a definite conclusion at the end, like, it's not one of those things, like, choose your own adventure where you, like, figure it all out yourself. Mm-hmm. But the lack of, like, as much dialogue and, like, the precision of the dialogue that they chose to use, like you could tell they put a lot of thought into it and what everybody was going to mm-hmm. say, just, like, really gave the, I guess, the viewer in this case the opportunity to, like, really get to know these characters on a deeper level than just talking would have done.
Yeah, it definitely gave you the chance to see the characters grow and develop mm-hmm. but not be told how they are growing and developing.
Yeah, yeah. Which I think has been a problem lately in some of the shows, but we can get into that more later.
Yes.
More later. So, when thinking about that, Ella, what's your favorite character in The Mandalorian, and why do you love them so much?
Okay. First off, favorite character, Baby Yoda.
Grogu.
Mm-hmm. Whatever yes. his name was.
Yes.
There's not really a deeper reason for this. It's a baby. Mm-hmm. It's adorable.
Yes.
I love him.
Yes, he's so cute.
Can't really get much better than that. Mm-hmm. I mean, Baby Yoda even got my mom invested in Star Wars.
Mine too, actually. Yes. When he almost died in, what was it, season 2, where he, like, fell in the water, my mother, like, stretched out her hand towards the screen and was like, no!
You know, baby Yoda has done the impossible by investing on mothers in Star Wars.
Yes. They're even more not Star Wars fans than we are.
It's true. So that's pretty impressive. Gotta love him for that. Uh-huh. But for actual probably character death and development, I have to go with the main character, the Mandalorian.
Yes.
I think it's another mark of just the subtlety of it, of the way they built up his character. Uh-huh. Like, I've never cheered so much for a character I didn't know the name of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for real. Like, it's so true. And I feel like it was part of the interest that you didn't know his name. That you were just, like, waiting on the edge of your seat to figure out who this guy was. Like, we were rooting for a bad guy. In a lot of ways. But it didn't feel that way.
Yeah, they very creatively, I think, chose scenes and chose what to show and what not to show to try to make it, like, you didn't necessarily watch the show and go, he is a great person, he's a hero, but you still saw the potential of him becoming a hero, and that's what made you root for him.
Yeah.
Was that you knew somehow he was going to become the hero, even though he wasn't at the start.
And they showed it so subtly. Like, the Mandalorian never says out loud even that he loves Grogu, or that he, like, wants to help Grogu or anything. But the whole thing is you get to watch him, like, demonstrate that through his actions, which I think is a really good example of also, like, showing and not telling. Just, like, the character doing what he wants to do and not, like, explaining why he wants to do it.
Yeah, which is more realistic for characters, too, because it sometimes can get into that space, especially in writing, but even shows, where the character is telling you why they want to do something, either in monologue or in, like, internal dialogue in a written form. And that's great. Mm-hmm. But sometimes you're like, why are you thinking about this so much?
Yeah,
this is kind of weird.
Yeah.
And so it gives them the more authentic feel that they do just do things. And that's how real people are, too. Mm-hmm. You don't constantly think, I really want to do this because of this. Because of this deep, dark secret in my past makes me feel this way.
No.
And convinces me to move in this direction, which that's not how people act. So. No.
I did not buy $3 honey because I have a deep, dark secret that I was pondering, you know? I just bought $3 honey because I had a poor financial decision in the moment.
Of course, of course.
Which was demonstrated by my actions and not that I was monologuing to you about my purchase of said honey.
Indeed, indeed.
Which I feel like makes sense. I feel like also the Mandalorian, one of the big ways he demonstrates subtlety is honestly his design, too. Like, the fact that you never see his face is another way that they just really showcased how much you can get attached to a character by not even knowing what they look like.
Yeah, and I feel like that's, like, the essence of a good character. Like, you don't know what they look like. You don't know their name. We didn't even really know his background at the start. Yet you become so attached to this character just because of who he is.
Yeah.
And which is largely just shown through action. So it's a really good use of, like, showing how you can use action to develop a character and not just, because a lot of times we rely heavily on dialogue to develop a character and explain things, and so I feel like they're very creative in using action as their way to develop characters and help you understand them in your own way.
Yeah, and it's not even like a lot of action scenes. Like, they have some of those, but it's really a lot of the Mandalorian just kind of doing the Star Wars life, I guess.
Like, Star Wars life,
like fly to the galaxy, trying to provide for himself and Grogu. Like, those are the best, like, those are the best episodes. And I feel like, especially season 3, the dialogue just got to be too much, where he's just explaining things, like, all the time.
Yeah. We also definitely got out of the smaller Star Wars universe feel.
Yeah.
Because,
yeah.
like, in the first 2 seasons, you were definitely, it was like a step back from this step back. It was more zooming in.
Yeah.
Because all these other Star Wars movies and franchises usually focus on these big epic battles, these world-changing moments. Yeah. And it was interesting to see it, like, very zoomed in from one person's perspective, just kind of living his life, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
And getting caught up in this bigger adventure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I agree. I totally agree. And maybe that's another way they demonstrate subtlety. Just, like, it doesn't have to be world-ending stakes to be a good story. Which, by the end of season 3, it kind of turned into that. Which kind of took away the charm. I agree.
Which brings us, we've always kind of talked about this, but our last question is, how does the series demonstrate the art of subtlety?
Well, we've talked about this a little bit already. Just talking about, like, the lack of dialogue. And I almost don't even want to say lack, because I feel like you don't really feel the need for any more talking, like, especially in the first 2 seasons.
It's just, it's an art in conciseness and clarity.
It is.
as writing majors, these are two of our favorite terms. Yes. Conciseness and clarity. Yes. Getting your point across in the least amount of words.
Yes. And you can really tell they thought through the dialogue they wanted to include. I feel like a lot of shows, they're just, like, monologuing the entire time because they're like, this is what we want to come across, so they're just going to say it. Mm-hmm. Versus in this, they, like, really thought through. The Mandalorian really uses his words, like, kind of how he used his, what are they called? Not bullets. The laser beam things. Yes. Quickly, accurately, and efficiently to get the job done.
Yes, yes. Yes. Now, jumping back to monologues. Uh-huh. The urge to monologue is strong. We have all seen it. It is in our writing. Some of us, maybe it's in the writing a little more than others. Mm-hmm. But it is a really good lesson in just learning how to you show your characters and not have your characters tell you about themselves.
Yeah.
And I think that was a good lesson to take away from The Mandalorian and implement into our own writing.
Yeah, I would agree.
But yes, there's also a lot of other characters and other things that are developed very subtly. Mm-hmm. And definitely the villain is one of them.
Yeah. I really love the villain in The Mandalorian because I feel like you really don't know what he's after for a lot of it, which is really fascinating to me. Just he wants the child so badly, but you never really... Even at the end of season 3, we still, like, we have a pretty good idea of what he wanted, but we still don't really know why. Which I think is really intriguing and just really shows this, like, subtle development of his character.
Yeah, but it's not like... they do it in a good way that you still understand that the villain needs to be stopped. And it's not a lack of presence from the villain. Yeah. You're not noticing his actions and feeling the tension.
Yeah.
But you also don't understand everything, and that's part of the tension.
Yeah. I feel like season one, especially, the tension between the villain and the Mandalorian was incredible. Which is crazy, because they never even saw each other. Did they?
No.
No, because he saw the henchmen.
I mean, technically, I guess at the very end... I don't remember if he looked out the window and saw him or not.
I don't know.
I wasn't very... I don't remember. We were too invested. We were too invested. He was kind of dying, too.
Yeah.
Probably.
Yeah. Dead. Yeah. Which is crazy.
That way was crazy.
So just really, like, playing with the idea of what a typical story should look like and, like, using subtlety to really bring out certain details a lot more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It really emphasizes the characters better, and it makes the plot more... almost less cluttered, because you're not getting overfed all this information that you're struggling to process. Who's trying to do what and what's trying to do that?
Yeah.
You're just watching and interpreting through your own thoughts, like, okay, so that's why they're doing that, or I don't understand this, but I really want to.
Yeah, and that's what made it such a fun show, too, is it's such an easy watch in a lot of ways. Like, even though it made you think, it was like, I don't know. Like, maybe the word mental clutter is the words I'm looking for. It's just, like, it felt like somewhere where it was, like, free space to kind of, like, be creative, even though it was somebody else's creativity.
That's true. And I also think it helped with... They were very also intentional, I think, about their show length. Like, there were very short episodes, especially in the first two seasons.
Yeah.
But I feel like that was done well, because just as you were starting to think that you were piecing something together, it would end, and you were like, I need to watch again, because I need to find the other puzzle piece to put it together.
Yeah, yeah. Which also brings into transitions, how they, like, subtly transitioned. Like, even though the episodes, like, are unrelated, they, like, feel very related. Like, it still feels like a cohesive narrative throughout, even though there are all these different scenes, and they flow into each other really well. Especially season two.
Yeah, I really like that. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, yeah, that's about all we have for you guys today. Thanks for listening to us just kind of go through everything. Next time, we've got a real treat for you guys. One of our favorite books.
This book Ellie introduced me to, actually, and I have since fallen in love. It has inspired much.
Yes.
Many, many hours of discussion, many hours of writing.
Many hours of research, actually, which is crazy.
So much research.
This is a fantasy story.
It is.
But here we are, just totally, like, invested into this world. And yeah, I read this story because I had this friend who I knew, who knew this author. And she really recommended it to me, so I read it, like, on a whim. And I love these books. Like, her writing has inspired me so much in how I tell stories.
It is definitely one of the books that I feel like has defined our reading styles and our writing styles.
It has.
And just the way you think about writing and how to convey a theme in writing, I think, really well.
Especially as believers, because it does have very Christian-like themes. Mm-hmm. So we're so excited to talk about that. Tune in next time to hear about the Heirs of Neverland's duology by Kara Swanson.
Thanks for listening, guys.
See you soon.